Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Do you play chess, or do you know someone who is a chess player? Well, I do. I have a grandson who has just discovered chess, and he's crazy about it. Tell me, do you know what the connection between chess and investing is? Now, would you like to learn how to apply chess strategies to your own business? Would you like to learn more about how people often mess up their finances and what they can do to straighten them out? Have you ever heard about a book called Rich as a King, How the Wisdom of Chess Can Make You a Grandmaster? Now, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and how to explore the amazing world of chess? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I'll be introducing you to my guest. He is Skyping in with us from Jerusalem. He is a wonderful success coach extraordinaire, and he will provide us with information and inspiration and some really, really great advice about chess and about finance. I'm pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk for Media and syndicated on iHeartRadio Talk with over 55 million subscribers. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure at iHeartRadio. Our show has had over 2.2 million listeners to date. So now it's time for you to sit back and relax as you enter the no wine zone. Pour yourself a glass of wine, get some cheese and crackers, and enjoy our show. Now let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. My guest uses chess as a metaphor to illustrate financial concepts. It began when he listened to his kids' chess coach teach them the philosophy of the game, and he saw that he was using the same ideas when speaking with clients. He started examining how we could employ chess strategies, the very same ones that had used to improve investment portfolios. He decided to begin the task of researching Rich as a King with Susan Poehler. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show today, Douglas Goldstein. Hi, Douglas. How are you doing today?
Oh, January, it is a real pleasure to be here. Thanks so much.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you with us. And as I shared with our listeners, right now you are Skyping in from Jerusalem. And I think this is just such an exciting time in our lives when we can have the studio in West Palm Beach. I'm in Arizona and you're in Jerusalem. It doesn't get any better, does it?
Absolutely. The technology is amazing.
Yes. Well, before we start our interview, I always like to ask my guests if they would be kind enough to share with our listeners where your success story began, where you were born and raised, and share with us who your early mentors were.
Oh, well, actually, I'm guessing that unlike some of your other guests, my earliest mentor starts very, very close to home. I actually started on Wall Street right after I finished school. And I was partners there with my mother, who was a vice president with a major brokerage firm.
Uh-huh.
And she and I worked together on all of the financial planning and investment services that we provided to our clients. And so I literally learned on the lap of my mother.
Oh, my gosh. And you were born in New York?
I grew up in New York. And by the way, I'll tell you one more thing. It wasn't just me who learned from my mother. It was my mother who learned from her mother. My grandmother was one of the first women to be licensed as a stockbroker in America.
You're kidding. Wow.
A real pioneer for women.
Yeah, because you don't hear about that too often. And your grandmother and then your mother and then you. So you were in, your family was in finance. What did your father do?
My father was a surgeon and my sister became a surgeon.
Okay. Now, how did you, so your early mentors were right within your family. How did you go to Israel? What was your life like in New York and what caused you to leave and go to Israel?
Well, everything was great. I grew up in New York. I went to school in the States and I met my wife when I was, I guess, finishing college, and we decided that we wanted to raise our family in Israel. Israel's a very, like certain areas in America as well, but Israel is a very, very family-oriented society, and that was very important for us. And so we decided to move here. I still work, in fact, in the United States. In other words, I still work on Wall Street. In fact, I'll often make the joke to people that I'm closer today to Wall Street than I was when I worked in Westchester County, you know, and dealing on Wall Street. Because the technology today, I trade, I have more information at my fingertips than I had when I started 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. And just as we started the show off, talking just about the technology that brings us together today, it's an amazing time to be alive, and it's an amazing time to be in financial planning. Now, how old were you when you and your wife moved to Israel?
23, 24.
Oh, okay. So you were quite young. How did your family feel about you making such a big move?
Well, they certainly supported our living here, but they did miss us. And fortunately, however, we all travel back and forth. In fact, I'm one of four children, and my brother and I live together. We're next door neighbors here in Israel. And the other two kids are still in the States. So we spend a lot of time getting together and certainly a lot of time on Skype.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I know about that as we are today. Now, let me ask you this question. Did you play chess as a child? How did you become fascinated with the game of chess?
So I've always liked chess. I'm what you call an avid chess player. And just between you and me, and so don't tell anyone, but when you use the term avid chess player, it sounds like you really know what you're talking about. But really all it means is you like the game a lot and you're very involved. It wasn't, in fact, actually until I was walking down the street one day with my daughter, who is now 21, but when she was five, and we lived in a small little town north of Jerusalem, and an older couple, they seemed older to me at the time because they were probably 40, and that seemed like, you know, way over the hill by then. And a Russian couple, and the husband looked down at my daughter, and he said, "How old is your daughter?" And I said, "She's five." And he said, "Well, it's time that she starts learning chess." And and his wife said, "And it's time that she starts learning piano." And I realized the culture from Russia, this is what they did. And so her husband started teaching my daughter chess, and the wife started teaching my daughter piano, and ultimately my daughter became a chess champion as well as a fantastic pianist.
Oh, that's a great story. And you know, the reason actually that I've booked you on the show is that I myself have not played chess. I'm aware of it, but I haven't played it. But I have a 10-year-old grandson. And he's discovered it, and he's just fanatical about it. And also, I might add that he has taken piano lessons, too. So those two things, they really seem to go together, don't they?
Well, you know, January, there was actually a very important study at Johns Hopkins University about 15 years ago that found that students who received chess instruction scored significantly higher in all areas of academic achievement. So I think that your grandson's well set for it. In fact, my co-author of the book, Susan Polgar, has found this as well, and she's got her own foundation where she's, I think, given millions of dollars to help students, just to help students learn chess, understanding they're not all going to become grandmasters.
Right.
But she realizes the benefits of getting kids involved, especially at a young age. So good for your grandson.
Oh, yeah. And they have at his school, they have a chess club, and he loves to play chess. And we've tried to encourage that. And I think chess, piano, math, all the academic pursuits, they all go hand in hand. And it's amazing, the younger they are, as you said, when they should be 5 years old, and that's when they should be exposed to these things, shouldn't they?
Absolutely. Well, at least according to her Russian coach. What was funny is after he started teaching her, I was walking down the street another day, and another Russian fellow from town walked up to me and said, Doug, is your daughter studying chess with Boris? And I said, yes, the nice old guy who teaches chess. He said, do you know who Boris is? And I really had no idea. But it turned out that her coach was one of the top trainers in Russia, and in fact had himself trained the Israel's champion, number one chess champion, and Israel's number one champion almost became the world chess champion. He was one step away.
Oh, wow.
So that was the coach for my daughter. And other kids as well in my family.
Sure. Share with us what it's like to raise a grand champion. Share with us, are there competitions? You have to travel? What does it all entail? And how much chess did she play every day to get to that level?
So to become good at anything, it requires practice. And I think the thing that I really began to see I'll tell you the difference I found with my daughter and my son, who was also a chess champion, was that my daughter really liked the strategic thinking. She would analyze and think and study games, and that was very interesting to her. And she could do this for hours on end. And my son was much more tactical. He would love to, it was like solving a puzzle. Every step was a puzzle, and it was a race. And I like to think, and I may not be a good enough chess player to say this, but maybe I am. But I found that if I can generalize, there's a difference between how aggressive boys play versus how aggressive girls play. And not that one is necessarily better than the other. It's just simply that there's a different style. And again, maybe it's just with my own kids, but I really felt like I was playing against a different type of person, and they both had the same training and they both did the same studying. So I'm attributing it to one being a boy and one being a girl, although I could be wrong. So
that's interesting. That's interesting. We're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with Douglas Goldstein, co-author of Rich as a King, we're going to talk some more about the connection between chess and investing and finance. We'll be right back.
Layla, a book by Jeannie Kerrigan, will take you on a journey, a raw, heart-wrenching journey. The final resting place? Love. Jeannie is an author, healer, and executive director of Ricky's Revolution Nonprofit. You can get your copy of her book at jeanniekerrigan.com. Ricky's Revolution comes directly out of Layla, dedicated to helping homeless runaway youths and victims of sex trafficking reach a place of safety. We distribute Jeannie's monkey named Ricky with vital hotline numbers embroidered on him free to children on the street through loving collaboration with thousands. Proceeds from the book and your donations have saved lives. Ricky'sRevolution.org. One expert, one solution. The book, The 411 on Step-Parenting, teaches you how to create a well-blended step-family. The 411 on Surviving Teenhood helps parents and teens cope with teenage temptations, teachable moments, and teenage social dilemmas. The books, The 411 on Life Skills and Ace Your Life, helps those living on their own with home and money management, personal care and safety, and much more. An award-winning, best-selling author, registered nurse, and personal growth mentor, Michelle Sfakianos will help you. Get the 411, my411books.com. Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shalt Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shalt Not Whine at Amazon.com.
Welcome back to the No Whine Zone, and we're visiting with David Douglas Goldstein from Israel, Jerusalem. I want to read a little bit about what he said in his bio. He said, "When I started on Wall Street, my favorite client was my grandmother. She, in fact, had been a stockbroker many years earlier, having been one of the first women to earn the license. Following in her footsteps, my mother also became an investment advisor, helping clients plan and build wealth throughout her 17-year career. I joined her as a partner in 1992, and the number one lesson that I learned from her was the importance of educating clients about handling their money wisely. Though we could guide them, they ultimately needed to make the daily dollar decisions themselves. I obtained the licenses that allowed me to advise clients on trading, not only stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, but also options, commodities, and futures. Eventually, I earned the license to supervise other advisor and also got the designation of certified financial planner." What an amazing career to begin under the guidance of your grandmother and mother. Now, when you became a certified financial planner, how did you put that together with chess? How did you incorporate the strategic and tactical aspects of chess and finance?
Well, I think that's a great question. I think that there's so many similarities between what financial planners do as and what chess grandmasters do. And it's important to differentiate that in doing the research for the book and working with Susan Polgar, we were looking at what the very, very top tier players did as well as the top tier financial planners did and tried to find the similarities. Susan, by the way, I guess there's kind of a theme in the type of women that I work with. I work with my mother and my grandmother, but Susan Polgar also was best known or originally known for breaking through the glass ceiling in the chess world because it used to be a men's game only. In fact, the World Chess Championship used to be called the Men's World Chess Champion. And Susan was disqualified from competing because she wasn't a man. Not that she wasn't good enough. She was she was perfectly excellent and really could have competed in that path. But they just said that it's not for women, not for girls, you know. And now because of her, that has changed. And she has shown that women can compete at the very, very highest levels.
Oh, yeah. And now what are the things that chess and investing, what were the things that you found that were so similar?
Well, let me say one of the things that it's not, because I think a lot of people are tempted to say, well, listen, if you look at a chess player, they're planning many, many moves ahead, and an investor should be planning many moves ahead. So there you go. There you have it. Just like a chess player plans a lot of moves, an investor should too. And I always tell people that if that was the only lesson that we could have come up with after all the years of working together, we could have saved ourselves thousands of hours in writing a book and simply printed up a bumper sticker that said, "Plan ahead. It wasn't raining when Noah built the ark."
Very good.
I really do think there's a lot more. You know, just for example, one of the one of the things that we learn that chess players do, and for anyone who knows even the smallest amount about chess, you know that there's a very special move called castling, when you're allowed to, in one turn, you're allowed to move two pieces, your king and your rook, and they can swap positions. And what this does is this protects your king and gets your rook into an aggressive position. So there's a huge metaphor about that, which is your king is obviously your most important position, just like January, for example, your IRA or your 401k or your retirement is probably your most important investment, because that's what's going to make sure you're safe for the rest of your life. You've got to protect that. And in the same way, if you have pockets of money that are stuck in the corner that aren't doing anything, you've got to make a move like Castling so that they can get into perhaps an aggressive position and really grow and begin to take steps to get you forward in the investment game. And that's what the Rook is like.
Okay. This is fascinating. And how did you become friends with Susan, and how did it come about that you both decided to write this book together? How did you connect?
Well, I'm not sure when we came up with the name for the book, Rich as a King, but when it came up, that was just, we said, that's got to be it. That's exactly the combination of chess and money. But not only is Susan such a great player, but she's a very, very well-known teacher and author in the chess world. This is actually, I think, her first non-chess book.
Oh, really?
But as we owned many of her books, and I have a radio show in Israel called Goldstein on Gelt. Gelt is the Yiddish word for money.
Okay, and I like that.
So my kids said, you know, why don't you invite Susan Polgar onto the show and tell her about some of your ideas? So it's exactly what I did. I had my producer get in touch with her. We brought her on the show. And in talking with her, I mentioned some of the thoughts I had had about how I thought chess related to money. Mm-hmm. And right away, not only did she pick up on it, but she had so many other examples. And I have to tell you, it's amazing to work with someone who is such a genius that she just thinks of things in a different way from, you know, how I normally would. And it was amazing.
Now, where does she live? Where is she based?
She lives in St. Louis. She's actually, she's retired from competitive chess now, although she plays exhibition games. And she's now the coach of she coaches the number one collegiate chess team in America. And they've been the number one team for the past, I think, 4 years, as she has been their coach.
And what is the name of that team?
She's at Webster University, the Webster University
Chess University. Okay, I'm going to have to share that with my grandson, because that may be he'll want to go. How long did it take for you to write the book together? Did it was it something that you were able to do through Skype, or how did that all the process evolve?
Well, altogether, we probably researched and wrote for about 5 years, which, as I always tell people, if you want to be an author, make sure you have a day job, because it takes so long to write the book. But we had a great time working on it, and both Susan and I travel a lot, you know, around the world for speaking engagements, and we used to either meet in unusual locations or we would just meet by Skype.
Okay, yeah, and that's what everyone does now, and it's an amazing. So now, what are some of the characteristics of chess that can influence a person to become a better investor? Could you share those with us?
Yeah, I'll give you another example. Actually, it just came up recently when I was losing a game of chess to one of my kids. I was trying to find a way to get an advantage, and then I remembered something we had written about in the book, which was sometimes when you're playing a game of chess, you feel like you don't have a great strategy. There's nothing, you know, phenomenal you can do to checkmate your opponent. And then I remembered something Susan said, which was, if you don't have a great move, just look for your worst performing piece and try to improve it a little bit. You don't have to have a fantastic move, but just you have a pawn on the side or your bishop's not moving. See if you can make it a little better, because that improves your average position. And I tell this to clients all the time. I say, listen, I don't know how to, you know, turn $100 into $200 overnight, but I am able to see, you know, Mr. Client, that you've got $60,000 sitting in a 0% bank deposit. What could we do to improve that a little bit? These little improvements, I think, can make such a fantastic difference.
Yeah, and there's really no need to be greedy about it. It's just a matter of adapting, creating strategies and adapting them to changing circumstances and thinking your way through it. Successful investors don't merely know a couple of techniques for picking stocks, trading, or keeping a budget. Rather, building wealth requires the ability to observe and examine the financial world and know when to act, react, or sit still. Could you talk about acting, reacting, and sitting still?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the great things about working on the book, when Susan and I would meet, we had offices all over the world. Maybe you've seen them. They're on the corner of a lot of city streets. They're called Starbucks.
Okay, yes.
So we would regularly have our meetings there, and occasionally we would pull out the chessboard and play a game of chess. And I don't know if she did it on purpose or maybe I was just having a good day, but every so often I would actually get in what I thought was a pretty good position. And I remember in one of the games we played, I actually was able to see how I could checkmate her, which is amazing against a world chess champion.
Yeah.
So I moved my queen and my knight and my I got all my pieces positioned pretty close to her king, and I'm just about ready to launch my final attack, and all of a sudden her bishop comes from across all the way to the other side of the board, swoops in and captures my queen, and within a move or two, of course, she checkmated me, and she looked up and she smiled and she said, "Doug, did you really think I didn't see what you were planning?" And I laughed. And then she gave me what I think is such important wisdom for everyone. And the listeners today don't take anything away except this. This is critical. She said, you have to look at the whole board. She said, my bishop was sitting on that square for like 15 moves. It didn't move. And you didn't even see it. There it was, the biggest threat. You were busy moving your pieces around, thinking you're all so smart. And you didn't realize that there's a whole board in front of you. And I'm sure you can imagine this happens with investors as well. They focus so much on one small area that they don't look at the big picture. They don't develop an overview. They don't have a real financial plan that's going to help them to get from where they are today to where they want to be tomorrow.
Oh, that is such a great advice. You have to look at the whole board. And, you know, we're going to look at the whole resume of sponsors when they are going to share their information with us. And when we come back with Douglas, we're going to talk a little bit more about act, react, or sit still. We'll be right back.
Have you ever met someone who was shot in the chest in cold blood and lived to tell it? Now you have. Meet Hannah Lugeri Murray, author, advocate, and survivor of domestic violence, and now the founder and president of Angel of Mercy Shelter of Hope. Her dreamlike life turned to horror as her raging husband stood across her and fired his gun. She was left for dead. By a miracle, she survived to tell her story. Her book is available on Amazon and her website. If you'd like to have a personally signed copy, please visit her website at livetotellit.com. Hannah is now in the process of raising money to build her own shelter in Chandler, Arizona. Her shelter will house abused women, their children, and unique to Arizona, their pets. For more information, please visit her website at angelofmercyshelter.org. January is thrilled to be welcoming Dr. Nancy Irwin, who will be co-hosting on iHeartRadio with January Jones. As a doctor of psychology, clinical hypnotist, and author of U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife, Dr. Nancy is an agent for change. Many people believe that change can be scary, but she believes it can actually be creative and fun. She does know a thing or two about change because at age 44, she transitioned from a stand-up comedian to shrink. Oh, believe her, the road from comedy to mental health is very short indeed. Most fears are learned, and the good news is whatever we learned, we can unlearn. Smoking, overeating, fear of public speaking, test anxiety, what have you. On our show, we'll be discussing how you can dissolve that negative programming and free your inner winner. Change is inevitable. You can either affect it or accept it. Visit her site, drnancyirwin.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes? People who have priceless personalities? In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
I'm pleased to announce that Priceless Personalities is also now available at audiblebooks.com. We're visiting with a very priceless personality today with us, Douglas Goldstein, and he is the co-author of Rich as a King with Susan Polgar. Now, Douglas, talk a little bit about, let's go back to act, react, and sit still. How do you know when to act, react, or when to sit still? Those are big lessons, aren't they?
They are critical lessons.
Deciding
how to manage your money. In fact, so many of the decisions that people make, we like to believe, are because we set great goals and then we break them down into small pieces and go ahead and achieve them. And I'm sure you've said this, and I've said this to people many times, but one of the things that that I realized and that Susan explained to me about how she became a world chess champion was that you don't just magically come up with an idea, write it down, and off you go. You know, people want you to believe that. And again, I have to, my disclaimer on this is I talk about goal setting all the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my day job is a financial advisor. But one of the things that that Susan pointed out is that the ability to know when to act and react and sit still is really based on having the right habits, and which you have to develop. You have to consciously develop the habit to be the certain type of person you want to be, who knows when to act, react, and sit still. So I'll give you an example if you'd like.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Let's say that you have a goal that you want to be better at giving charity. In other words, you say, listen, I see that most Americans, you know, average something like 1% of their income goes to charity, but I want to give 20% of my income to charity. That's a great goal. It's huge. You're going to change not only the lives of many other people, but you're going to change who you are. But if you just say that, it's the same type of person that says, okay, you know, I'm going to go on a diet and I'll lose 50 pounds. We all know what that, you know, how often that leads to success. But if
yeah.
you change your habits, and I'm going to tell you how to do that. If you change your habits and become the type of person who gives charity all the time, it's habitual, all of a sudden that will become who you are and you will actually achieve that goal. And here's how to do it. The first thing you need to have in to develop a habit is you need a trigger. You need something that reminds you to do the habit. So, for example, maybe the trigger could be when you're sitting at your desk and it has to be something that happens regularly and predictably. You're sitting at your desk in the office and your boss comes by and hands you your paycheck and says, January, great job. Mm-hmm. So that could be the trigger that you need to the next T. By the way, there are three T's in this. The next one is mm-hmm. your target, and your target could be to give charity. So you may say, mm-hmm. I know my check is going to be $2,000. And before you even open the envelope, write a check for $400, you know, which is 20% to uh-huh. your favorite charity. That's uh-huh. your target. And the third
okay.
key, we said the trigger was mm-hmm. the paycheck that gets you doing it. The target is you want to give charity. And the third thing is to give yourself a treat. Somehow you have to reinforce it. And it could simply be as simple as saying, you know, great job, and pat yourself on the back, or, you know, give yourself a special smile and do this
okay.
every time. And you'll build good. And you can apply this obviously to any habit you want to develop. I think you'll find
okay. Now let's have you apply this habit to someone who's listening and wants to lose weight. What would their trigger be?
So let's say, for example, that mm-hmm. the problem is you go to the cookie drawer, right, and
mm-hmm.
you open it.
Okay.
So maybe your trigger would be opening the cookie drawer.
Uh-huh.
The target, now, it can't be, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to, you know, run for a mile, because it's not going to happen. You need to have very, very small, tiny, tiny habits you're trying to change. You'll build them up over time, but maybe your target could be, I'll do one push-up. That's it.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Not a big deal. Hopefully most people can do it. If not, you can work your way up to one push-up.
Uh-huh.
And then when you've done it, go ahead and take half a cookie, right? Give yourself
half
a little
a cookie. Okay, got it.
Start with something, so because you want to give yourself a treat for having done your habit. Do this for 2 weeks. Do it for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, whatever you need. I'm not looking for radical change. And by the way, I say this thing with investing. You know, I can't tell someone, you know, sir, you're saving $0 a month. You've got to save $5,000 a month. It's not going to happen.
No.
But if you say, you know, save $2 a day, everyone can start doing that.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the high risk of the stock market. What should my listeners do with an investment accounts given the high risk out there? What's your advice to your clients?
You know, I think that you have to make sure that you've developed a diversified portfolio. And again, if there's a chess concept that goes along with this, which is you have to make sure all of your pieces work together. In fact, in the book, in Rich as a King, our last chapter, which I think is my favorite chapter, we have the 64 strategies to make you rich as a king. It's 64, one for each square on the chess book, on the chess board. And so number 55 is make sure all your pieces work together. And what that means is that sometimes you'll have a part of your portfolio that is very risky, and that's okay, you know, as long as you have the tolerance for that kind of risk. But you have to make sure you have other investments in your portfolio which balance that. And it's all a question of developing that balance and the proper asset allocation, which is going to make you a successful investor over time.
Oh, what are some of the other, you know, we have to take a break in here from, or we get to take a break in here from our sponsors. And when we come back, Douglas, I want you to share your website information and how people can get your book and a little bit about your radio show. We'll be right back with Douglas Goldstein.
Joining January Jones as her co-host on the show is Miles Miller, the Great Success Creator. Miles is a two-time best-selling author with books entitled Against the Grain and Successonomics. He continues to transform 100,000 people all over the world through his speaking and training. His uplifting and essential messages like Bulletproof, Time Machine, and Strength in Numbers are impacting every audience he meets. Together with January Jones, they'll explore how to be successful and what steps you can take to achieve the success you want. Visit successhq.net, leadup.biz, and learningbreaks.com. Are you living the life you always wanted? Is your relationship fulfilling or a constant roller coaster ride? Do you know how to chart your own path? If you are sick of struggling, overwhelmed, stressed, but desire balance, emotional freedom, and a purposeful life, then it's time to try something that really works. Dr. Casey's unique result-oriented emotional mastery technique will teach you how to be your own therapist while empowering you to be your best. Learn more at drsimoncasey.com. That's drsimoncasey.com. What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven, international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, laughter play, and well-being, provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
Welcome back with our guest today, Douglas Goldstein, and he is the co-author with Susan Polgar, Rich as a King. Douglas, could you share your website information and share with my listeners how they can get your wonderful book?
Sure. The website for the book is called Rich as a King, and conveniently that is the website, www.richasaking.com. And just by going there, you can click on the Buy Now button and order the book from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever books are sold. And also on the website, we have what I like to think is a fantastic blog, as well as a podcast. And I, by definition, January, I know that the people listening today like to listen to audio. So they will certainly enjoy the podcast. They're short little snippets. They're usually between about 2 and 5 minutes with just an idea. It's got a strategy, a tactic, and an inspiration to get people on the road to becoming as rich as a king, hopefully.
Right. And you are very prolific. You also have a wonderful book called The Retirement Planning Book, the easy-to-understand must-read book if you want to retire comfortably. And I think so many of us need to read that book. Also, you have another fascinating book called The Expatriate's Guide to Handling Money and Taxes, What Americans Living Outside the USA Need to Know About Investing and Filing Their Taxes. Those are two fantastic books. I highly recommend your website. Let's briefly revisit these 64 strategies. And what can you share with our non-chess players? What strategies can you share with them to help them improve their financial situation?
Well, I'll tell you what, let me give you one of the strategies that came up from a conversation we actually had very early in writing the book. Susan and I discovered that I was telling her about the field of what's called behavioral finance, which is a very hot topic these days. It's a study basically of how come people make poor decisions in investing, even when they know the right thing to do. And in fact, a fellow named Professor Daniel Kahneman won the Nobel Prize for his research there. And Susan and I had lunch with him. And we sat together in New York, and we told him about our ideas, and he was very interested. And he said, you know, why don't you send me your chapter about the similarities between behavioral finance in investing and in chess? So we were thrilled. A Nobel Prize winner was going to review our book.
Wow.
That's great.
Yes.
And so we sent him that chapter. And it took him a while because he's a busy guy.
Yeah.
And he came back and his only comments were about our chess analysis. And I guess I take that as a compliment because he must have liked our review of behavioral finance, but it was interesting that he had his own thoughts on chess. And I mention this just because behavioral finance is so important because people tend to make bad decisions. And probably the worst decision that people make, and this is a great takeaway, I think, for today, is that they trade too much. They always feel they need to do something, and they end up buying or selling or selling or buying, always at the wrong time. And they'll always justify it because that's people rationalize everything, as you know.
Yes.
But that doesn't make it right. It just makes it rationalized. So I think that if obviously you have bad positions in your portfolio, trade and get rid of them. But don't try to trade the market because statistically, you're just never going to win.
Yeah. And that follows with your act, react. And then the third thing is be still and maybe not react so much. And that's a hard thing for people to do, isn't that?
That is a hard thing. Listen, that's why people like to work with advisors. You know, it's funny. Someone once said to me, Doug, what do you teach in your book? Isn't that what you do with your clients? And I tell them proudly, I teach everything I know in my books. So if you read all my books and follow, that's all I've got to say. It's not like I don't hold anything back. So
Right.
But the fact is emotions are what drive people, and that's what makes people make poor money decisions. So it's good if you know the basics of investing, and that's what we teach, you know, in this book or any of the other books.
Right.
But if you want to make sure that you don't mess yourself up because of your emotions, then it's good to have a coach or a financial coach or a financial advisor.
Yeah, definitely. And you also give advice on increasing retirement income. Could you briefly touch on that topic?
Yeah, one of the areas which we talk about in the book, in fact, we have some kind of add-on information as well that we give people through the website, is the importance of learning about the bond market. Because when people keep money in the bank, which really does pay almost nothing, they're losing money against, you know, compared to inflation. You know, the $100 that you could go to the grocery store today might fill up your cart. But next year, if you take that same $100, you're not going to be able to fill up your cart. And that's because inflation is eating away at the value. So you've got to find a middle ground between money in the bank and money in the stock market. So it's important, I think, for people to learn about bonds, what the risks are and what the benefits are. And that's something that we talk a lot about.
Oh, yeah. And also you touch about how much help should you be giving children. We have about a minute. Could you briefly comment on that?
Yeah, I love my children. And I think that,
and we all do.
One of the biggest problems I see people have is that they sometimes are guilted into helping their children too much. And their children don't learn how to be financially independent, which is a crime. Your kids should know how to take care of themselves. And I think your job is to educate them, but not to support them. And there comes a time when you tell your kids, I'm not bankrupting myself to support you. I have to make sure I'm safe for the rest of my life. Now, I'm not against giving gifts and helping out here and there. That's not the issue. But you should not be the sugar daddy or sugar mommy for your children.
Oh, that's such good advice, and that's a tough one for so many parents to hear.
Call me if you have a problem. I'll tell you straight
yeah,
away.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, Douglas, we will call you again and have you back on the show. It's been wonderful visiting with you, and if you have any grandchildren or kids who are interested in chess, they can take chess and apply it to their financial situation for the rest of their lives. Thank you for sharing this wonderful information with us today.
January, it was a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
To my wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our show today with Douglas. Isn't he amazing? My upcoming guests are all exciting, eclectic, and energizing, just like Douglas. This is the show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful, too. I would love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining world. When you can, sign on to my website, januaryjones.com. If you would like to be a guest or advertise with us, just go to info@januaryjones.com. We love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for success. Now, remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, please stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my guest, Douglas Goldstein. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe as we close with music by Sorantos.
Hi, this is Sorantos. Check out my trending rock song called Nothing to Hide. 33% of all profits for this song are going straight to the American Cancer Society. I hope you enjoyed my song. Listen to my other songs for free on my website at www.melogia.com.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.